ബുദ്ധദേവ ബൈ രവീന്ദ്രനാഥ് ടാഗോർ. ഓൺ ദിസ് ഫുൾ മൂൺ ഡേ ഓഫ് വൈശാഖ് ഐ ഹാവ് കം ടു ജോയിൻ ഇൻ ദ ബർത്ത്ഡേ സെലിബ്രേഷൻസ് ഓഫ് ദ ലോർഡ് ബുദ്ധ ആൻഡ് ടു ബോ മൈ ഹെഡ് ഇൻ റെവറൻസ് ടു ഹിം ഹൂം ഐ റിഗാർഡ് ഇൻ മൈ ഇൻമോസ്റ്റ് ബീയിങ് ആസ് ദ ഗ്രേറ്റസ്റ്റ് മാൻ എവർ ബോൺ ഓൺ ദിസ് എർത്ത്. This is no formal demonstration of adoration on my part, befitting the occasion. I offer him here today the homage I have offered him again and again in the deep privacy of my soul. I had once gone on a visit to Buddha Gaya, and it had thrilled me to think that he who had hallowed the earth by the touch of his feet had once come to that very place in the flesh. Why, I had thought with a pang, had I not been born in his day, that I might have received his holy influence directly with all my body, directly with all my mind and all my body. At the same time, it had occurred to me that the immediate present is extremely limited in its compass and hazy with the dust raised by the whirlwind of contemporary events. History has proved again and again that nearness in time clouds our vision so that we fail to realize fully the greatness of the supremely great among us. How often in his lifetime Buddhadeva was hurt and wronged by the spite and antagonism wronged. How often in his lifetime Buddhadeva was hurt and wronged by the spite and antagonism of petty minds. How often they spread false calumny about him to belittle his transcendent greatness. Hundreds of men who were near to him in the physical sense could never feel the immense distance that separated him from them in spirit. In the common haunts of men, his uncommon sublimity went unrecognized. It was just as well, therefore, that it had not been given to me to see him amid the dust and haze of current events. The greatest among men take their place in eternity the moment they are born. From the present moment, they reach far back into the past and forward into the distant future. This I realized that day in that temple to which I have referred. I saw a poor fisherman there who had come across the seas from far Japan to expiate for some misdeed. Evening passed slowly into the solitude and silence of midnight, and still he sat with folded hands, repeating with intense concentration, Buddham Charanam Gacchami. In the Buddha do I seek my refuge. So many centuries had passed since the Sakya prince had left his palace home and gone out into the night to strive that men may be freed from sorrow. And there, that night, before me was this pilgrim from Japan, praying to him for refuge in his deep distress. To that humble penitent, he was closer and more real than all else on the earth perceptible to the senses. His deathless presence had touched the life of the poor sinner seeking deliverance. By the light of his spirit's flaming aspiration, he could see him who was the man supreme. If Buddhadeva had appeared before his contemporaries as a powerful king or a victorious general, he could have easily impressed his age and won honor for himself. But that honor, abundant as it might have been in his day, would have passed into oblivion with the passage of time. His subjects might have been abstract by his real. His subjects might have been abstract by his regal splendor. The indigent might have admired his riches, or the weak his power. But it is the man striving for perfection of the human spirit who alone can acknowledge and acclaim the supreme man against the background of all time. That is why we see Buddhadeva the Mahayogi seated today on the throne of men's hearts, the glory of his manifestation in the distant past, crossing the bounds of his time and continuing beyond the present. It is to him that men still come tormented by their passions and painfully conscious of their own surroundings and painfully conscious of their own shortcomings and say, I seek refuge in the Buddha. It is in this intimate realization by the spirit of man of his presence through the ages that we find his truest manifestation. Ordinary persons like us express ourselves in our relations with one another. We are known by the class or race or community to which we belong. Very few have been born on earth who were self-luminous, whose light was not a borrowed light, who stood fully revealed in their own radiance of truth. We see partial expressions of man in many persons renowned for their wisdom, learning, heroism, or statesmanship, who have dominated others by their own will and moulded history in the pattern of their own desires. But the complete expression of man is seen in him alone, who represents in himself all men in all ages and lands, and whose consciousness has not been broken up by the customary walls of age or race or nation. Man reveals himself in truth, the truth of which the Upanishad speaks. He alone knows the truth who knows all living creatures as himself. He is the complete man who has known the truth thus, and he shines in the glory of his own humanity. As the Upanishad says, he who sees himself in all and in all in himself can never remain concealed. He stands revealed for all time, but this manifestation is obscured in the majority of men today. We can catch glimpses of the truth in them, but much remains hidden from sight. When the earth was first created, the entire globe was wrapped in a thick vapor. Only the highest mountain tops could be seen here and there, rising above the mantle of vapor into the clear light. Similarly, most men today are wrapped in their self-interest and pride, with their consciousness obscured. The truth where the spirit has free play remains undeveloped in them. The creations of men are still imperfect. How could we have recognized the truth in man behind this thick veil of imperfection if it had not been suddenly revealed itself in some self-luminous and transcendent person? To man's great good fortune, his true self has flamed up in Buddhadeva, who showed himself as one who had accepted all humanity within his heart. What then can hide him from view? What narrow walls of time or place or hankering for the fulfillment of petty immediate ends? At the end of his austerities, Buddhadeva rose up and manifested himself to the world. In the glory of that manifestation, the true India was revealed. The light spread far beyond the geographical boundaries of India to eternize his advent in the history of mankind. India became a land of pilgrimage, that is to say, people of other lands were drawn to her by bonds of kinship, for through the words of the Buddha, India had accepted all men as kin. India ignored none and therefore remained unacknowledged by none. The barriers of race and country were swept away by the flood of truth, and India's message reached men of all races in every land. To that invitation came response from China and Burma and Japan, Tibet and Mongolia. The obstruction of seas and mountains gave way before that irresistible call. In far distant lands, men proclaimed the Epiphany. They announced that they had seen the Supreme Man shining like the sun that had rent the veil of darkness. They gave lasting shape to this proclamation in 1,000 images of stone in plain and desert. With infinite labor, they gave expression to their adoration in image and picture and stupa. They seemed to say that their adoration of one was so far above the common run of men must be shown by achieving what appeared impossible. They were moved by a marvelous inspiration. In deep darkness, they painted pictures on the walls of caves. They carried enormous blocks of stone up to the tops of the mountains to build temples there. Their skill crossed the seas and gave birth to exquisite works of art in far lands. The artists chose to remain unknown, only transmitting to posterity the mantra that had inspired them. In the Buddha do I seek my refuge. In Borobudur in Java, I saw the stories of Buddha's nativity carved in hundreds of images round the stupa, each a perfect specimen of the sculptor's art, chiseled with loving care and infinite pains. This is at once an example of the cultivation of art and the practice of austerity, the tapasya that eschews all desire for the fruits of work and for name and renown, and aims only at the dedication of all that is best in oneself to glorify Him who is worthy of being adored and remembered for all time. Men have gone through greater suffering and hardship to fulfill what their devotion to Him demanded, saying that only by the supreme creations of that munificent genius which speaks in the language of universal humanity could they truly proclaim that He had come for all men in all ages. That was what He had asked of men, that their self-expression should be through work that was arduous and enduring, work that would signify the victory and liberation of the spirit. So we find in those far-off days of the past, His worship established in all its vigor all over the great eastern continent, even in remote inaccessible corners of it, and His glory proclaimed in desert plains, in solitary caves and on mountain tops. A still more precious offering was laid at His feet when the Emperor Ashoka publicly confessed His own misdeeds in letters carved on stone, proclaimed the glory of the religion of love and non-violence, and left in His stone pillars an abiding emblem of His reverential homage to the Master. Was there ever a king like Him on earth? The Master to whose inspiration He owed His greatness needs to be invoked today even more fervently than in His day. The cruel stupidity of wicked racial discriminations and caste and color bars parading as religion has stained the earth with blood, mutual hatred, more deadly than mutual violence, outrages humanity at every step. Today in this hapless land poisoned by fratricidal malice, we yearn for a word from Him who had proclaimed love and compassion for all creatures as the path to salvation. May the best of men appear again to save what is best in man from destruction. He never cheated man of the greatest gift that one can give to another, the gift of respect. The charity which He called a virtue does not consist in the giving of alms. From a safe distance, avoiding all contact with the receiver. The true giving is a giving of oneself. It has been said that whatever is given should be given with Shraddha, respect. A man may become a wicked insult. It has been said that whatever is given should be given with Shraddha, respect. A gift may become a wicked insult if it is tainted by a sense of sanctimonious superiority or pride of riches. That is why the Upanishad says, Bhiya Deyam, give with awe. Give with awe. That religion is to be feared by the practice of which we may lose our respect for others. In India of late, the practice of religion has proceeded along channels that spread disrespect for men in all directions. That religion is to be feared, by the practice of which we may lose our respect for others. In India of late, the practice of religion has proceeded along channels that spread disrespect for men in all directions. The danger of this is not only spiritual, it is a fact of direct experience that this is the greatest obstacle in the way of political independence. Can politics ever solve this problem by extraneous means? Buddhadeva forsook princely rank and riches to strive for the deliverance of men from sorrow and suffering. He did not discriminate among them on the basis of fitness. Not one did he scorn as a barbarian or a North Aryan. He did not discriminate among them on the basis of fitness. Not one did he scorn as a barbarian or a non-Aryan. He gave up his all for even the humblest and most in all lands without distinction. Shall the glory of that tapasya fade from India today? What evil have we succeeded in keeping out by raising barriers between man and man? We had a full treasury, but what is left of it now? Have not attacks from outside broken open its doors and raised its wall to the ground? And yet today we are putting up walls after walls to keep the desire for kingship with all men immured. We have placed guards at the gates of temples to restrict meanly even the people's right of worship. We could not save the wealth that is diminished by giving and spending. We could not save the wealth that is diminished by giving and spending. We have only locked up in a sectarian strong box that wealth of love that grows more it is given away. Our store of righteousness has become indistinguishable from that of worldliness. Then the India that had once held before the world a shining example of humanity by her respects for all men has now narrowed down that ideal. By her disrespect of men, she has herself became unworthy of their respect. Man has become man's worst enemy because he is diverse from truth and his manhood is obscured. That is why we see in men all over the world mutual suspicion, fear and animosity. And that is why the time has come to invoke the Supreme Man in these words: manifest thyself in order that manifest thyself in order that man may be manifested. Buddhadeva had said, conquer anger by compassion. The world saw the end of a terrible war only the other day. The victory that crowned one group of belligerents was a victory of armed might. But because brute force is not man's supreme source of strength, that victory has proved unfruitful and is only sowing the seeds of fresh dissension. Man's strength lies in mercy and compassion. The brute in man that has not yet perished does not allow him to realize this truth to which the master paid homage when he said that all anger, whether one's own or others, must be conquered by non-anger. Unless man follows this injunction, his life is bound to be a failure. The victory of anger and revenge by means of brute force does not bring peace, which mercy alone can confer. So long as man does not acknowledge this in his political and social life, the wicked will never cease from troubling. The fire of conflict between states will never be extinguished. The monstrous rigorality of prisons and the threatening frowns of army barracks will make life increasingly intolerant. There will be no end to all this misery. There will be no end to all this misery and suffering. It is time, therefore, to remember him who sought to dissuade men from the folly of hoping to achieve success by violence and ask them to conquer anger by kindness. In these days of the worldwide indigeneity, in these days of the worldwide indignity of man, it is meet that we should say, Buddham Sharanam Gacchami. He will be our refuge who manifested this ideal. He will be our refuge who manifested the ideal of man in himself, who spoke of the liberation which is not a negation but a positive reality. The liberation that comes not by abjuring work, but the liberation that comes not by abjuring work, but by the practice of self-giving through right action, and which contains not merely in the rejection of anger and malice, but in the cultivation of immeasurable love and goodwill towards all creatures. In these days, blinded as we are by motives of self-interest and by cruel, insatiate greed, we seek refuge in him who came into the world to relieve in his own person the real self of the universal man. Buddha Deva by Rabindranath Tagore.